Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So I think, you know, in 5 years' time, it's going to look almost unrecognizable. And any OEM that doesn't have a really kind of robust strategy in this space is going to struggle.
Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, Editor-in-Chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, Senior Editor at Inside EVs. On this week's show, it's basically Christmas for us in that Rivian Autonomy and AI Day was this week. First, we'll run through some of the big announcements, and then we'll speak with Rivian's Vice President of Autonomy and AI, all about what's next for the company's driver assistance and self-driving features. But first, Patrick, you literally just flew in from San Francisco. It's weird because I saw you like, I feel like 12 hours ago, and now you're just like in a different, the miracle of air travel. You're on a different part of the country. How are you doing? How are you hanging in there?
It was 24 hours ago, right? Not 12. It was a day ago. Like, oh man. My time zones are very mixed up. And as I told you before we started recording, like, I haven't seen daylight at all today because I got to SFO at like 6:30 a.m. and then I landed at 5 p.m. in New York. So I'm fried. This could be a really fun episode of the podcast. I may just be incoherent and making stuff up more than usual.
That'll be cool. So just like always.
Yeah. But it was good seeing you. We hung out at the Japantown Mall. You know, we bought some Dragon Ball Z figurines there to get around the tariffs. We took a Waymo back to my hotel before you peaced out. I guess relevant to this week. Like, I hadn't been to San Francisco in a couple of years, and I'm like stunned at the volume of Waymos in that city. Like, my God, have they taken over?
Yeah, we were like in an Uber there, and we were trying to talk about it, but we wanted to be mindful of the driver who were like, you know, talking about the end of his profession. We were like
the replacement
in hushed tones talking about the Waymos. Yeah. It's crazy. It's, they've become like a totally normal part of life here. And, it blows my mind every day. Cause I see if you go down to San Francisco, you see 20 of them at every intersection, basically.
Yeah.
Just doing their thing.
Yeah, and they're going to so many cities like next year. This is one of those things that like so many Americans haven't seen this yet, but I think, like, by the end of 26, they will. And that's going to be pretty mind blowing. But they're certainly not the only ones doing big stuff in autonomy. It's a nice little segue right there to the kind of the big news of the week. Right,
still Tim? Got it.
Still got it, baby. Yeah. Even when I'm jet lagged and exhausted.
Rivian held its Autonomy and AI Day in Palo Alto this week. And the theme of the whole event was that Rivian is a lot more than just a car company, that it is pushing hard into the future technologies that will define the car business, you know, that it aims to be a leader in the autonomous space, especially.
Yeah, for sure. And we don't normally aim for these episodes of this show to be like all about one topic or one manufacturer, but like Rivian had a lot of news this week. And like, it says a lot about where that kind of still scrappy American EV startup is going next. So a lot to unpack here, man. Where should we start?
Yeah, I think there were broadly, if we break it down, there were kind of four big announcements, and we can split them into hardware and software, two each, two hardware announcements, two software. So let's start with hardware. The big one for us is that Rivian said it's introducing LiDAR into its fleet, and that starts with, drumroll please, the R2. It won't be in the car at launch, but it will hit production later in 2026.
Yeah, we're going to go a lot more into like why this matters, but like the fact that LiDAR is coming to the Rivian R2, which like before this announcement was made, we had an interview and some briefings with Rivian, and the interview you're going to hear later, like at first I was like, I thought that they stuttered. I was like, surely you mean the big expensive trucks, the R1S and R1T. It's like, no, this is the mainstream everyday, you know, volume seller, like their Tesla Model Y basically is going to get LiDAR. And so like that ran a car like that is crazy. And also we were right about this because we called it months ago and it's proof that we're right about everything all the time and everyone else is stupid and bad except for us.
Yeah. Rob, I think it was Rob, one of our contributors spotted, yeah, like Rivian posted a picture of a, like a raw R2 body that was going through testing or whatever. And it had this little notch above the windshield, and he, yeah, was like, I think that's where the LiDAR is going to go. And he was totally right.
To be fair, I thought he was like dumb and insane at the time. Like they would put LiDAR in a cheap car like the Rivian R2. And he was right. Cause Rob Stumpf is generally a lot smarter than I am. So, yeah.
So why don't you tell us what is, for the people that don't know, what is LiDAR and why does it matter? Why are we excited about this?
Yeah, LiDAR is great, Tim. It's magical. No one knows what it is or where it works or where it came from, but it's very important. I'm kidding. No, it's this LiDAR is that spinning apparatus that's on top of a Waymo. That's a LiDAR array. It's a basically light-based radar. LiDAR uses lasers to generate a 3D image of the world. And, that is one layer of data for autonomous vehicles. And I think the broad consensus, people we've talked to in the autonomy space, is that LiDAR is crucial to the future of, like, really eyes-off, hands-off, fully driverless vehicles. The big exception to that, obviously, is Tesla over there. Elon Musk would disagree. And he says that, Tesla's cars use a very sophisticated camera-based system. And, their whole thesis is that AI can be trained to make a autonomous driving system that doesn't need LiDAR. And Elon has also been historically against it because LiDAR has been pretty expensive. And it's only for, like, really expensive vehicles and test beds. But here's the thing, it's getting a lot cheaper over time, and mm-hmm. now we're seeing it on the Rivian R2, I'll say by contrast, General Motors is also going to add LiDAR to at least one of its vehicles in 2028, and that's the Cadillac Escalade IQ, and the last one of those I drove was $130,000, and so... that Rivian's putting this on a SUV that's like almost $100,000 cheaper is pretty mind blowing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and we've heard RJ Scaringe, CEO of Rivian, has said this. James Philbin says this later in the episode that basically, like, these sensors are now a few hundred dollars, or they're in the hundreds of dollars. So given what they can do, there's kind of no reason not to include them. And you mentioned, I think the very broad consensus is that this is necessary for self-driving vehicles, that you can't just do it with cameras, because this works in, it works in bad weather. It works in the dark. It's not a camera. Rivian says that LiDAR is what's eventually going to get it to level 4 autonomy, like a Waymo. And they're even saying that that is going to happen in these R2 vehicles with LiDAR that are coming out at the end of next year.
Yeah, one quick fun fact about LiDAR costs. About a decade ago, one of those cost $75,000, and now they can be done for like well under $1,000. And they're even cheaper in China, which is why like Toyota Corolla priced cars are getting LiDAR over there. And I was in San Francisco to drive the new Mercedes-Benz CLA, which I'm embargoed on. I can't talk about, except I liked it. I don't think I'm breaking any rules by saying I liked it a lot, but they have a bunch of autonomy news coming out in the next few months. And some of the folks I was talking to there also agreed. They were like, for hands-on automated driver assistance and, hands-free highway, you don't really need LiDAR, but like for the really high level stuff, mm-hmm. Like really truly driverless cars, that's something that is a crucial layer to have. And they didn't say that they're going to add it to their vehicles or whatever, but like that's what they're thinking about at Mercedes too. So kind of everybody is moving this way.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I'll say is there's a lot of talk about like how much data do you need? There's this belief that you need a lot of different sensors for autonomous driving. You need like radar, you need cameras, you need LiDAR too. All of those things working together, sometimes redundantly, sometimes it's like a backstop just to make these cars like see and understand and process the world better than just a camera-based system could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other really cool thing that I noted in this news is like the LiDAR going into the R2 is not just an R2 thing. It's not just going to make those cars perform better over time than your current generation Rivians. It actually is going to help the whole fleet learn. It's like even Tesla, which doesn't use LiDARs in the cars, they'll have these test vehicles that go around and they map things and they do validation on their own autonomous software using LiDAR, right? And so basically these LiDAR-equipped R2s will be able to go around and gather all this really great, really rich data that'll be able to feed back into the driving model and make it so that all the cars will perform better. At least that's kind of the idea that Rivian has here. And I would add that the LiDAR actually is pretty nicely integrated into the R2. If you're watching on YouTube, we'll have some photos of it. A lot of LiDARs are just kind of like a hump on top. It's definitely not like the Waymo top hat, that's for sure.
Yeah, it looks a lot nicer than that.
Next bit of hardware news is that Rivian is now designing its own chips. I will be honest, I don't understand like all of the details here because I'm not chip pilled yet.
You're not a chip man. You're a car man, not a chip man, you'd say.
Yeah, exactly. So go to our site, go read the story. You'll see all the details there about the chips. But basically Rivian says that this new computer will be kind of the backbone of these future autonomy efforts. But yeah, basically together, that plus the LiDAR is what Rivian's calling its Gen 3 autonomy hardware.
Yeah, so that's hardware, and you can hear James Philbin explain more about that in a little bit. So then there's also some news on the software front from these guys too, right?
Right, so we've already touched on this a little bit, but Rivian is basically laying out kind of a more detailed roadmap to higher levels of autonomy. We've heard Rivian talk about this kind of stuff before. Eventually, they want to do point-to-point, kind of like a Tesla FSD, where you sit in the car, you plot a route and the car drives you there while you're paying attention. Eventually, they want to go even higher than that, level 4, where you don't have to pay attention at all. But that starts with something called universal hands-free. This is a feature that's rolling out later this year in Rivians in the Gen 2 R1 and then later in the R2. And it brings basically a hands-free cruise control with lane keeping, something that Rivian does now on the highway, that like Super Cruise for GM does now on the highway. They're bringing that to all roads that have markings, all roads with lane lines, basically. This will be part of something that Rivian is announcing called Autonomy Plus. It is $2,500 or upfront, $2,500 one-time purchase, or $49 a month, and it will get you access to these Rivian driver assistance features as they get better over time.
We love a good subscription feature around here in the car industry. We asked, because I think when you're talking about urban autonomous driving, like probably like the template that everybody knows and understands and maybe even lives with is like Tesla Full Self-Driving. We asked, like, how does it compare to that? For now, it's more restricted. It's hands-free, as you said, on any road with painted road lines. So it can't just do some random rural dirt road or whatever. It's a little bit more restricted, I guess you'd say.
It doesn't stop at stoplights. It doesn't see pedestrians. Yeah. It's not a full self-driving type deal. It is much closer to an advanced cruise control.
Yeah. But they're working on doing more with it. And that this seems to be kind of the next big thing for the autonomy space a little bit. Like I almost feel like, at least for passenger cars, like highway, hands-free, it's a bit played out. Like, it works great, but it's like bringing this stuff into urban environments is the next step here, and also the scariest and most controversial, like, for obvious reasons. But like, a lot of them are getting into this stuff. Nissan is one of them. They announced like they're gonna be doing this in 2027 in North America and in Japan with one of their partners. There's another big announcement that we're can't speak about yet, but will be coming out. But like, I think Rivian, what they're doing is very of the moment in terms of trying to like bring autonomy more into cities as well for passenger cars.
Yeah, and I don't want to like necessarily prejudge it. At this point, I haven't tried it. I don't know if $49 a month is a great deal for, like, you can get Tesla FSD for $99 a month, and we've been driving it lately, and it's really, really good. Like, it is not autonomous. You need to pay attention, but you put in a destination and it will drive eerily like a human and get you there and do all sorts of, you know, lane changes and turns and sees pedestrians, sees bicyclists. And this is like half that price for something that is like not really close to that. So I think whether that $49 a month or that $2,500 actually makes sense really depends on like how quickly Rivian can roll out these, the point to point, the eyes off, some of these future features, because right now they're not talking about the timeline. Yeah. They're just saying like, this is where we want to get, this is where we are now, but we don't really know when those intermediate steps are going to actually happen.
Yeah. And a little bit more news on the AI front too, right?
Yes. So Rivian, again, like a lot of this stuff, I will say, is stuff that Rivian has mentioned in bits and pieces before. Now they're kind of putting it all together and adding a little bit more detail to it. They are building their own in-house AI assistant for the car. They call this Rivian Unified Intelligence, and it is launching in early 2026 on the R1. It'll connect to outside services like Google Calendar and future outside services to come. So again, like this is a lot of companies are getting into the kind of AI assistant game. Like most of them are partnering with outside, you know, Gemini, ChatGPT, so you can ask questions or plot a route or whatever. Rivian is kind of taking a lot of that in-house.
That Mercedes-Benz I just drove, the CLA, has a voice assistant, AI voice assistant that works with Google Gemini. And we have a video that I shot coming to Inside EVs probably next week. And I liked it. It wasn't perfect, but like I got a kick out of it. I found it really useful. And like, let me give you a quick example. Like after I got home tonight from the airport, I had to drive home kind of a nasty winter storm. And I realized because like, I'm bad at planning ahead always. I forgot to change out the wiper blades on my car, and like, you know, like just like it's a downpour and like I could have used better wiper blades in that moment. It's like I wanted to ask an AI assistant, like on the route I mapped out, is there like an AutoZone or an O'Reilly Auto Parts or something I could pop into along the way? Instead, I would have had to pull over, pull out my phone, cancel the route, and look it up that way. So like, you know, there are some useful applications if you could just like talk to a very smart computer for that stuff.
I also think there's a lot of, there are smart applications for an AI assistant that's actually well integrated into the car. Because right now in a lot of cars, you can get like the Google Assistant is built in, but it's like, you can ask it things about the weather or like where, you know, a burrito place is.
Yeah.
But if you ask it something like, hey, like what feature is in the car? You ask it something about the car, it doesn't know. And it's
how,
like,
how much range do I have left? Because like, how would I know? Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it would be cool if the Rivian, like basically Rivian's saying that their assistant will know about the car. It'll know about the vehicle, that kind of thing. So that kind of makes a lot of sense. But I guess taking this all together, Patrick, what do you think here? Is this like a compelling vision for Rivian? Is this a little bit of like a, you know, EV sales are in general slowing down? Like Rivian itself has had, like the backdrop for Rivian is that they sell these great cars, but their sales have been stagnant for the last couple of years. Is this them just trying to, you know, get in the news cycle? Like, what do you think overall?
Nothing changes the fact that like the Rivian R2 is like a make or break product for that company. And it's going to be one of the first EVs that's going to really have to stand on its own merits, agnostic of tax credits. And from like what we see in the specs, like I think that is possible for that to happen. But like I did kind of wonder that too, because a lot of the car companies lately like are really focusing on autonomy, because like they're making these big tech investments across the board, and all of a sudden like EV is like a bad word in the industry. It's scary. It's you know, it's not fitting like the sort of Trumpian zeitgeist that we're in right now. So it's like I think that when it, in terms of like product announcements, like I think they're all of these companies we know to be developing better batteries, better battery technologies, but what are they publicizing? It's probably more of their like AI and AV assistance right now. And this doesn't count for Rivian, but like, again, to go back to Mercedes, just because like there's a lot of like similar stuff being announced. And I was just at that event, so it's kind of on my mind. Like they're Mercedes is bringing a lot of these features that we're talking about to gas cars as well. Like the autonomy stuff, AI assistance. over time, EVs are a better platform for that. They just are in terms of power, in terms of how energy is used and so on and so on. But like, if you have to be a car company that makes a lot of different powertrains and you feel like people are kind of backing off on electric ones for a little bit, like it kind of makes sense to announce this stuff for now. As for Rivian, like I do think it helps keep them in the news cycle, helps keep investors excited, helps people get excited about R2, which is still, half a year away, you know, if that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think RJ Scaringe is definitely right when he says, like, he said it to us, a lot of interviews, is like, there will be a time when if you're a car company and you can't do self-driving, like, it's too late for you.
So yeah, I agree with that.
I think this is the exact time, like, this is the time to invest in that kind of stuff. I think genuinely, like, AI is having a hype moment for sure. But also, like, in ways that we discuss later with James, like, in very real ways, AI advancements are making autonomous vehicles a lot more realistic and making the development happen a lot faster. So it's not just like a coincidence that a lot of companies are diving in or are investing more right now. But I also think, like, Rivian has a lot to prove here, right? Like,
yeah,
it has. Right now, it's making this announcement as a company that clearly has really smart and talented engineers working for it. They have a great car. Right now, they have a hands-free highway assistant, right?
Yeah.
They don't have a Tesla FSD point-to-point system. So we still have to see. And they're talking about someday pretty soon, as RJ told Automotive News recently, he was like, basically, we're going to have fully self-driving well before the end of the decade. They're talking about selling fully autonomous technology to consumers, which is something that, like, hasn't happened yet. And they're talking about doing that on a really short timeline. So, like,
4 years. Four years in the next 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they have a lot to prove here.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that, like, the subscription feature thing is a tall order. And, like, so many car companies have floundered with that. But, like, people do want the hands-free driving assistance. Like, that is a really in-demand feature. People pay for it on Super Cruise. They pay for it on Ford Blue Cruise. Like, those have been really successful subscription drivers. And Rivian said this is one of the most... I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's the most requested feature among their customer base. Like, they are giving people what they want here. And, like, yeah, to your point, like, I'm a bit of an AI skeptic, or at least I think it's the hype is overcooked. But, like, autonomy... the advancements in autonomy, that's one of the most tangible benefits we've seen from the AI boom.
Yeah.
Like, far and away, like, a lot of it, besides this, like, ChatGPT is going to take everyone's job. Like, yeah, sure. But it sure is pushing the AV space forward very quickly. So, yeah. And like you said, but proof, there's still the countless safety questions here. Like, we often in this industry, and I think us, we're guilty of this. We give a lot of the non-Tesla automakers the benefit of the doubt. It's like, well, you're not as reckless as Elon is, but, like, they all have to earn the public's trust just the same with this stuff. Like, Waymo's great, but it's had its share of questionable incidents, you know, no fatalities. Except for poor Kit Kat, unfortunately, but but they all have a lot to prove here, including Rivian. So we accept as normal, the 40,000 people die in traffic accidents in America every year, but when this stuff has, it just, because it's different and new, and it has to prove itself.
Yeah, and I will say, like, Rivian is clearly taking this very much step by step, right? They're not coming out and saying, we're going to have a million robo-taxis on the road next year, right? They're saying we're going to have this feature, and then we're going to have that feature, and then eventually we're going to work our way up toward it. So, I think that part of it makes sense.
It's step by step, but, like, as you said, it's a very compressed timeline. It's full autonomy by the end of the decade. Like, that's it's not quite like, a billion robo-taxis making you $30,000 in passive income next month or whatever, but it's pretty ambitious.
It's bold.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing I'll say before we head into our conversation is, like, they're not the only ones doing this, right? Tesla has, that's like the holy grail for Tesla is to take the driver out of the car. Lucid is also talking about in its upcoming midsize vehicle, it's like $50,000 vehicle. They want to make that do eventually level four driving. So there's a lot of companies trying to do exactly this.
Yeah.
And now with more on Rivian's autonomy efforts, here's our conversation with Rivian's Vice President of Autonomy and AI, James Philbin. Thanks so much for joining the show today. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
James, we'll start with the easy stuff, man. You had some really, really exciting news this past week, but tell us about you first, if you don't mind. Like, well, what's your background and how did you get into the AV space and with Rivian specifically?
Yeah, so my whole career is kind of in the like machine learning kind of domain. I did my PhD, it feels like decades ago. Back at Oxford. And, in those days, machine learning and AI really hadn't happened yet. So it was still very much very early. A lot of stuff didn't work. It was difficult even to get, companies excited about this stuff because it was, it was all very pie in the sky. And so, I did a startup out of Oxford. It was actually one of Google's first acquisitions in the UK. I moved to the US as part of that. And then I worked for a number of years at Google on a lot of the computer vision stuff that is actually in Google Photos still today. So some of the face recognition things and like image search as well was something my team worked on. And then, I sort of caught the self-driving bug, moved to Zoox, where I was, I think, employee, 40 or so. So very early, built up their whole perception team. I think I was, a team member of one. And then, when I left, it was, 70-ish size team. Moved to Waymo. At Waymo, I did a lot of ML efforts, like these sort of cross-cutting ML projects to really kind of modernize their stack. I really kind of wanted to get back to like shipping products. So, I love working on technology, but I love it even more when, customers can actually use your stuff and you have that direct connection. Mm-hmm. And Rivian was just an amazing opportunity. Has such a strong brand, even when I joined. And just that connection with customers is something I really, really like.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to set up our conversation. Like, I want to talk about some of the specific new features that Rivian's announcing and kind of some of the longer term vision specifically for your autonomy efforts. But just to set this up, like, We've had kind of, and you're, I think you're kind of the best person, it seems like, to ask this, is like, there's been a real ebb and flow in the autonomous vehicle space over the last several years, right? There was a period of intense hype and then a few years of real disillusionment where we saw a lot of players exit the space. We saw a lot of automakers who were really excited about this dial things back. And now it seems like a lot of companies are reinvesting, right? There's like new news from Waymo like every week about, new cities, and Uber is striking all these partnerships. It's just like a really vibrant time again, it feels like, in autonomous vehicles. And I'm wondering, like, how do you explain, there's obviously your guys' news too. So like, how do you explain that sort of resurgence? Is it a technology breakthrough kind of thing? Is it a, competitiveness? Like everybody sees this, growing, and so everybody's now trying again to make it work. How would you explain that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. So I think there's, the technology has been, in development for decades. And I think there was a period of time where I actually don't think engineers got like overexcited, but certainly investors got very, very overexcited. Mm-hmm. And that's when there was like the peak of the hype train, right? Where people were imagining, 50,000 autonomous robotaxis next year. This was sort of in 2016. And I just felt like the investment community got way over their skis. I think the engineers have been plugging away. I think there's obviously a lot of things that have happened in the AI and ML space that are sort of accelerating things. And that's obviously helping. But I think it's just it's a really hard problem. It's taken as long as it's taken to get to where we are. I think it's no longer like a science project, right? It's a technology that we can deploy and is actually seeing, real world use cases. So I think both in the sort of L4 domain as well as the consumer domain, which is where we're focused.
No, that was a great breakdown of where we're at on this moment too. Do you think, I mean, like, one question I've been really curious about is how much has, like, this current boom in AI fed the moment we're seeing in autonomy, whether it's for consumers or for, like, full-blown L4? Like, how much is that really AI happening?
I think it is having a big effect, actually. So I think, and you have to remember that what sort of the general public sees in AI has really been something that's a shift that's been happening for, you know, almost a decade now, which is really the shift from sort of component-wise machine learning models to like more end-to-end approaches. And so I think, obviously, that has been sort of turbocharged in the natural language domain with LLMs. Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of, like, a lot of those techniques have actually come back now to robotics, you know, of which, you know, autonomous vehicles is one type. And yeah, it's a big part of the large driving model that we're building here at Rivian, where we're not generating sort of tokens of language, but we're generating tokens of trajectories that we kind of piece together, and that essentially tells you how to drive. And those models are trained essentially end-to-end from the raw sensor data all the way to the ground truth of every Rivian owner who's ever driven. So that's kind of how these, mm-hmm. these methods are working.
Yeah, and so I promise we'll get to your actual features in a sec, but if you would, mm-hmm. what is the difference between that you mentioned, that transition from component systems to end-to-end? Is it like a small part of a system used to be machine learning, and now you're talking about, like you say with driving, where it goes from an input all the way to an output, and that is all now one, you know, AI system?
Yeah, so, you know, the previous, I would sort of call it kind of an AV 1.0 approach, where you had these sort of components that link together. So they tended to work, you know, to a certain level, but it would be hard to push beyond that level. So there were all these sort of complexities where you had, you know, two systems that needed to work together, but you were training them separately, or some sort of hard-coded rules you need to put in that, like, oh, you know, most intersections work like this, but this one, mm-hmm. I need to yield to the left. And so it became very difficult to scale those systems. There was like a lot mm-hmm. of engineering input that was needed, and sort of increasingly so. And I think it became clear to everyone that although you could solve certain areas with this approach, and I think Waymo demonstrated that in Phoenix, that this mm-hmm. was never really going to scale in a general way, and that we needed bigger and more intelligent systems to actually, you know, handle these, you know, driving tasks in a more sort of generalized way.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about what is the first kind of big announcement from you guys that you're rolling out later this year, that is universal hands-free. Tell me about that feature. What makes it different from what Rivians have right now?
Yeah, so with the launch of the Gen 2 Rivians, which was last year, we sort of did a full melt and repour of the autonomy stack. So we really built it up, kind of rebuilt it from the ground up. You know, the reason for that is that, you know, the sensors were so much better, the compute was so much more powerful. We knew we had the ability to kind of do a deep vertical integration where Rivian is in control of that entire stack, and also can sort of start this data flywheel where we're able to sort of record sequences, driving sequences, get them back up to the cloud, learn from them, and feed that back into the whole system. So, you know, the initial fruits of that this year was our first version of hands-free, which was enhanced highway assist. Now, that was still using these mapped roads. So although it was hands-free, it was only on these sort of mapped roads, 150,000 miles of mapped roads. And the big new feature, universal hands-free, we're actually removing that map restriction. So because of all the investments we've made on the perception side, in terms of the intelligence around how the system can handle things like intersections, we're sort of lifting that restriction and enabling essentially the enhanced highway assist features, the sort of lane keep and distance keep, essentially on any marked road. So that would be 3.5 million miles of roads in the US. So it's a huge scaling up. And that was really, you know, when we talked to customers, this was their number one piece of feedback, is like, you know, we love using hands-free. We just want to use it in more places. Yeah.
Fascinating. We've heard that from other OEMs and from, you know, car buying data sites like Edmunds. Like this is becoming a feature that people want on cars. It's hands free, and they seem willing to pay for it more than other subscription features. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's when you do these long drives, you know, for me at least, you know, if you're doing them yourself, you arrive, you're tired, you're worn out. It's like actually mentally takes a lot out of you to do these, you know, super long commutes or super long drives. And I think, you know, if you can do those hands-free, even though you're monitoring, it's just a totally different experience. So like I arrive so much more sort of fresh. I just queue up podcasts and basically just sort of listen all the way.
I want to ask, when you're training these models too, you've implied that, like, you know, this is data from Rivian drivers who are driving right now. Like that would include like me when I've been in the Rivian. How does data transmission work? Is that a thing that you can explain at all? Like that? I know that there have been questions about that from other competitors too. It's like, well, how do you get all that data back to wherever it needs to be processed exactly? How's that work?
Yeah. So first of all, like we do a sort of trigger based collection. So we're not recording everything all of the time. You know, most driving is very boring, right? We don't need more driving where you're just sort of stuck in the lane. We actually want to find those interesting scenarios where it's actually going to move the model, the training, in a meaningful way when we upload it. So that's, right. I think, the first step is sort of intelligent triggering. That's happening on board. When the trigger fires, we essentially capture, you know, all of the sensor data for, I think it's the previous 15 seconds and then the subsequent 20 seconds. And that's kind of packaged up, archived up. And then depending on the type of trigger, we can either then send that up via LTE, essentially, via a modem, or, you know, we can wait for you to, you know, connect to Wi-Fi, and then we can use that pipe to get the data up as well.
Gotcha. So it's trained on like key moments, like difficult, crucial moments where special things need to be taught, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, there's a variety of ways you can do that. But one of the ways is, you know, we're actually running our autonomy stack in sort of shadow all the time, even if you're driving. And so what we can look at is like you did this, the system wanted to do that. And so that's an interesting moment, right? Where, you know, you're doing something different from the system, and that could be interesting, right?
And I absolutely know that, you know, you don't want to draw a comparison to any direct competitors, as no automaker would. But, you know, I think that we have to ask, is this is the one that most people are familiar with. Like, where this level of universal hands-free is, how does that compare to like autopilot or full self-driving from Tesla, which I would argue is kind of the closest to this in a lot of ways? Like, where is that at versus where you're at and where you're launching and where you want to go, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one thing you can know about the Rivian autonomy stack is it's constantly improving, right? So I think we really built in this idea of very regular OTAs, and we've, you know, essentially every OTA we've had this year, the system has improved in some way. Sometimes that's not like big new features. It could just be like performance improvements. But the sort of the models and the systems are always sort of getting better. So where we are today is, you know, UHF is this big sort of opening up of the map roads. Actually, the technology underneath that is sort of very foundational for then the next step, which is sort of building towards things like a point-to-point system, which is more like an FSD approach. And the reason for that is that, you know, we've taken that HD map requirement out. We're actually now using an SD map. So you can get essentially like, imagine something that looks a bit like a Google map. You essentially get those maps anywhere. And the system can now reason off of those maps. You can do navigation. You can sort of position yourself, move over into lanes. You know when traffic lights are coming up. And so, yeah, this is really a foundational piece that we need for any point-to-point system. And so, yeah, we're targeting that. You know, team's working very hard on that, which will be, you know, sometime soon. I'm not going to give any dates right now, but so I think, you know, this is a really big moment for us, but it's just a point in time, and it's going to get better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like to compare this to others that people might be familiar with, like something like a Super Cruise or a Ford Blue Cruise, this can be hands-free but only on certain mapped roads, and those are generally like big highways. This, what you're talking about, is basically an adaptive cruise control, but on any road with lanes. Doesn't have to be pre-mapped by you guys. And you mentioned point to point. How do you think about expanding this? Is it okay, hands free, and then we add capabilities, so you'll be able to, you know, make turns, you know, notice pedestrians, that kind of thing, turn it into more of an FSD, and then from that go to eyes off? Like, what are the next kind of milestones that you expect to reach with this?
Yeah, so I think just to correct one thing you said. So ACC is just distance following, but the system actually is staying in the lane as well. And kind of doing a bit more than that. So it's, there are places where, the lanes aren't even marked. Like if you're traveling through an intersection. So there's actually a lot more going on the hood around, like, where are you going? What are you following? So we actually have a concept of a virtual lane center, which exists even when the lane lines are not marked, which the system is using internally. So yeah, so it is sort of a general system that can be expanded into this sort of point-to-point feature. So I think the next step is really integrating with navigation. We have actually a version of that system that we demoed yesterday to some of our investors. And that will actually do the full kind of driving task for you, including turns, picking the direction to go, indicators come on. And so, yeah, that's really the kind of where we're going to with our point-to-point system. And then, yeah, in terms of eyes off, that's really like a big validation piece where, within that eyes off category, we really need to be demonstrating like human level driving within the ODD. And so, a lot of that comes to the
eval. ODD was what? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the ODD is like where you can use the feature, essentially.
Okay.
In what conditions, right? So, yeah. Like, is it sunny or is there a snowstorm? That's part of the ODD. Is it on this highway or is it this sort of the alleyway, right? Those are kind of ODD differences. And so, yeah, within the region where you could enable eyes off, we really want to be demonstrating that almost like human level of performance. And to do that, we need a lot of data. We need a lot of simulation, actually, so that we can replay the system virtually so that we see how it did over these millions of miles every time a piece of code is changed. And once we gain confidence, that's sort of the pathway to going to eyes off.
And so I guess let's move maybe on to the longer term vision, since we're already kind of touching on that. You mentioned the large driving model. This is kind of the pathway that you see, like the foundational pathway to those kinds of higher levels of autonomy, right? So tell us about the large driving model. Like, how is this different from what you were doing before, what others were doing before? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so I think, the large driving model, it's really heavily inspired by, some of the work we've done that we've seen in LLMs, right? So in the same way that LLMs, they have these series of, neural net architectures, they're called transformers. The LDM has something similar. We're producing these, not words, but little pieces of trajectory. And then we actually use something called reinforcement learning, which was first, done in the LLM domain. Instead of with language, it's again with trajectories. So, so we're getting a lot of that like acceleration because a lot of these AI companies, they're publishing new approaches, new architectures. And we get to kind of pick and choose like the best approaches and then leverage them, for our task. And then in terms of, how the system gets better. So I think the data piece is a big part of it. And, I mentioned triggering earlier, but one of the things we built into the Gen 2 architecture is the ability to push new triggers live. So we can actually have engineers say, oh, I want to see more cases where the driver's interacting with a jaywalker, right?
Yeah.
And we can actually write that query, push it live to the fleet, and then the data starts collecting. So we don't even need to wait for an OTA to start collecting that type of data. So that's very, very powerful, right? So as we encounter problems with the LDM, we can essentially mine the data. Essentially, the fleet becomes like a huge dynamic database that we can use to sort of improve the model. And that's really a big way that we improve LDM and sort of keep that velocity of improvement going.
Yeah, and one thing, this is sort of a similar vein, but like one of the challenges that I think we've heard about with this kind of end-to-end model, with whether it's a chat bot, whether it's a language model or a driving model, is like sometimes you don't know exactly why it is making the decisions that it's making because it's not based on rules, right? How do you think about it?
It's like running a Google Gemini search, right? It'll give you a different result every time sometimes, which I'm assuming that's not what you want in a car, right?
Well, whether it's a great result or a bad one, like you want to sometimes know why it made that, so you can either replicate it or not make it not do that. How do you think about solving that problem with this end-to-end approach?
Yeah, so a few different ways. So one is that actually our LDM goes into something called the motion planner. And the motion planner is able to put in more sort of guardrails on top of the trajectory. So for example, even if the LLM, you know, might want to, you know, run a red light, the planner essentially can say, no, you can't do that. So you could, so it allows you to put in these sort of targeted conditions that you can follow. And then you sort of force the output to follow those rules. So the game there is you want the large driving model to take as much of the task as possible, because otherwise you're sort of recreating a lot of these heuristics. And then you want to just put in just enough guardrails that you can sort of guarantee the safety of the overall system. And so I think that's a big piece of the approach.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is we can actually put some of these rules into the learning itself. So during the reinforcement learning step, we can essentially, you know, penalize certain outputs. And that's actually a little bit easier than in the language domain, because in language, you kind of need a human evaluator to tell you if the output is, you know, bad in some way. For us, like, a lot of this can be physics based, right? Like if the output ends up in collision, you know, that's bad. You don't need a human to
not what you
that.
Want.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we can actually put those rules into the training itself while the model is being trained. So I think, you know, those two pieces together, plus, of course, the very large evaluation we do before we release anything, is kind of how we control those pieces.
Super fascinating. We've been talking about AI a lot so far. I'd like to pivot and talk about hardware next. And like, one of the things that I think is most exciting about your announcements this past week is that the R2 is getting LiDAR, which is wild to me, because like, that's, you know, your affordable model. This is not a high-end Halo vehicle, I guess, the way the R1s are. So like, why go that route with LiDAR on the R2s? And like, is that about making autonomy better, or is it about data collection? Like, what's your play there?
Yeah, so you know, LiDAR is an incredible sensor. I mean, there's a reason you see it on all of the sort of L4 players that are going for, you know, high levels of autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's really blocked it from the consumer space in the past is cost. So, you know, it used to be that these LiDARs were tens of thousands of dollars. They were not able to be built at scale. Humans had to go in there and calibrate them. And all of those things have changed now. LiDAR is following one of these classic sort of, you know, cost curves, where as it's been scaled, the price has come down and down and down. Yeah. And it's now really comparable to kind of a front-facing radar in price, and very much in the ballpark for a consumer vehicle. So yeah, for us, like, we really believe in the multimodal approach. You know, the autonomy systems, you know, they can behave amazingly well, but only if they see something, right? If you essentially can't sense something, and there's all sorts of cases where cameras either can only see something partially or poorly, you know, so think of a dark night, a snowstorm, you know, heavy rain, all sorts of conditions where, you know, having those multiple modalities that includes radar and now with R2 will include LiDAR, really makes a huge difference to the system. And I think for us, it's getting to a higher level of performance with the same amount of data, or getting to the same level of performance with much less data, is kind of what LiDAR enables you to do. So it sort of gives us really a great way of like bootstrapping the system to much higher levels of performance.
I know, I'm not sure you could go into pricing details, obviously, but like, so this would not, in theory, be like a massive price differential as an option in R2, is what you're saying, right? I mean, it would not be cost prohibitive to add that for the consumer.
No, not at all. No.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
And then just because you mentioned the kind of multiple sensor versus just cameras sort of approach, do you think that it's possible to do, you know, safe eyes off self-driving with just cameras eventually? Or is this something that's always going to need LiDAR, always going to need radar and that sort of thing?
I think it's, this is an opinion. So I think today it needs those things. I think it's probably possible, you know, in good conditions to get there with cameras only, but I think you'd have a very restrictive ODD, which probably makes the system much less useful, right? So maybe you can't use it at night. Maybe you can't use it when it's rainy. Maybe you can't use it in the snow, or, you know, all these other conditions. And so I think, like, you know, we really think that like the multiple modalities is kind of what the customer wants. They want to be able to use these features all the time everywhere.
Yeah.
And having these multiple modalities is kind of one of the enabling pieces for that. And really the only reason you wouldn't add them is a cost one. And that equation has really changed dramatically over the last few years. That's where it, you know, no longer matters. And then, you know, some people think it adds a lot of complexity, but in the way that we're training our end-to-end approach, essentially this is just another input that goes into the model, right? So there's not these like hard-coded rules like, oh, if LiDAR sees this and camera sees, you know, that's kind of a very much an AB 1.0 approach. For us, it's just another input into the model that we train end-to-end. So there's sort of no extra engineering complexity from adding those sensors.
Right. And critics will say, well, you know, the system gets confused when there are too many different types of sensor inputs. And you're saying, well, we've kind of solved for that.
Yeah. I mean, the system gets better. And any confusion, you know, that it is in the network, not something that we would need to worry about.
Fascinating. Right.
And so the other thing that we learned this week is this is kind of a big one, buried the lead. Rivian is now designing its own self-driving chips. Why do that? Like, as people who don't know a lot about chips, like, why would you do that?
Why is that a big deal? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is what's on the market like not good enough? Is it not specialized enough? What's the point of doing this yourselves?
Yeah, so in the and specifically, I think it's like the inference chip, right? So it's the ability to run these large models in the most efficient way that is sort of really where our silicon shines. Why would we do this? So I think we see a kind of a gap in the market around performance. So that's something that we felt like we could deliver more power at the same kind of, you know, power usage and price point versus what else we see in the market. And then there's a lot of benefits from having that sort of co-development of silicon and software together. There's a lot of kind of incidental choices that are made in some of these AI models where it may or may not map very well to the final silicon. And when you design them together, you can kind of really optimize the system jointly. And it gives you huge efficiency improvements when you can do that. And so, like, I mean, the teams are literally sitting like essentially in the same building. And so we can just go and talk to the silicon design team, ask them, you know, what's the best way to do this? And we can have those conversations. Like, that's just not possible if you're using someone else to do that.
You got to ring NVIDIA up every time you need something, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or whoever it is, right? So it's, So those are kind of some of the reasons to do it. And we also see that, you know, this inference chip is quite general. So we can, you know, potentially use it in domains, you know, outside of the vehicle, although we're not announcing that anything like that today.
Right. And when you say inference, if I'm getting this right, that's what's actually in the car, right? Doing the work in the car, not what's training the models somewhere in a data center, right?
Yeah. So inference is the task of essentially running the neural network. So you assemble the inputs, you run the neural network left to right, and then you take the outputs. That's the inference task.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like a lot of like linear algebra. So it's like matrix multiplications, and you want to do them as quickly as possible. And obviously on a
simple
vehicle, you want it to do. It really is kind of just like a bunch of multiplications. It's just millions and millions and millions of them. and you want to do it efficiently, right? Because you're on a vehicle, you don't have like a data center size, nuclear power engine coming in. So those are some of the constraints.
Yeah, I was going to ask, and I hope this isn't a silly question coming from somebody that's just had to learn a lot about AI in the last year. I've covered the auto industry in 15. Now this is a big part of, you know, what we do. But like, do you have to build a data center for everything you're talking about, or is this just done on vehicle? Like how is that different from everything else that we're hearing about with like data center build outs as AI scales?
Yeah, so I mean, today we, you know, we're lucky to have you know, Amazon as a partner, obviously, a big investor, and so we're using you know, a lot of GPUs in AWS data centers, essentially. But yeah, we are, you know, training all of those models in house, but we're using those data centers to do it.
That's great, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I want to ask you too, it's like when you talk about this kind of boom in autonomy, it really does feel like there's like level four robotaxis, Waymo, and then there's ADAS. There's like consumer cars and full blown robotaxis. And I'm wondering, like, at what point do those really start to converge in your mind? And like, when do you really think we'll start to see personal cars with like true, like, you know, like robotaxi level autonomy? And like, what does that timeline look like for Rivian?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's going to happen, you know, sooner than people think. So I think you see this already in the sensor space, right? That, you know, these LiDARs that used to be these very, very expensive things only seen on robotaxis now coming down to a price point where they can be in any consumer vehicle. The same thing is happening, you know, with compute, where, you know, that's becoming, you know, much more affordable and you can put that in kind of every vehicle. And then, yeah, I think people's expectations are also going up, right? Because as people use Waymos, they're like, wow, this, you know, this is actually great.
Yeah.
We love this. I want this in my vehicle. And so I think all of those things are coming together really to sort of drive consumer autonomy forwards. So I think, you know, in 5 years' time, it's going to look almost unrecognizable. And any OEM that doesn't have a really kind of robust strategy in this space is going to struggle.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
I feel like that's a great place to end it. James, thanks so much for joining us today. Really, really appreciate it. Lots of exciting news from Rivian.
Yes, thank you so much,
thanks,
James.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Yeah.
Great chat just now, James. Thank you. Yeah, I got to wonder if nobody's in the car, if they're all autonomous, who's going to talk to the AI?
True. Oh, maybe they'll talk to each other. They're going to make, yeah, they're going to put the Tesla bot in there.
They'll fall in love. Yeah, it'll be this, you know, machine romance thing. Anyway, weird questions, not my problem.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Tim, who you got for me?
I have a plus, and it is Subaru. Near and dear to my heart as a Subaru Forester owner myself. Subaru family. It's good to see Subaru finally getting really serious about EVs. We saw these two cars a while back, the Trail Seeker and the Uncharted. They announced them. Now we know the final pricing and some of the final specs for these. So the Trail Seeker, which is kind of like an electric Outback wagon type thing, it costs just around $40,000. And it gets 280 miles of range, which is more than Subaru initially announced. The Uncharted, which is a compact, kind of like a Crosstrek size deal. This one really surprised me. This, they're saying, costs $35,000 before destination fees, and it gets over 300 miles of range in front wheel drive configuration. Not super like Subaru, but I think
they occasionally veer off the all-wheel drive path.
Yeah.
Like there's like a handful of examples historically, but yeah. it does seem really solid, that thing.
But it's cool. It's like last year the Equinox EV got Inside EV's coveted breakthrough EV of the Year award.
Yes.
For being a car that goes over 300 miles and costs $35,000. And now a year later, we have like a few, you know, not a ton, but we have that. We have the Nissan Leaf. Now we have this, the Uncharted also doing that. So this space is moving forward pretty quickly. It's cool to see like these mid $30,000 options just get a whole lot better just in the last year.
Yeah, without compromises. I also have a plus this week. We'll end this on some positive news all around. Lithium ion battery pack prices are way, way down, according to Bloomberg NEF, which is the energy research arm of Bloomberg. They have dropped 8% just this year. It's down to 108 $108 per kilowatt hour, which like doesn't really mean a lot to the average person, but I did the math and that's about 150% cheaper than it was a decade ago. So cheaper batteries mean cheaper EVs.
Yeah.
Because you know, the most expensive part of an EV is the battery. And as this stuff scales and grows and they get used to making the technology, the prices will go down. And this is proof of that. So some cool news here, I think.
Other way to put it is they said that battery pack prices are down 93% since 2010. So basically, like in 2010, battery packs, that same battery pack cost, that same kilowatt hour in a battery pack cost like $1,400, I think, well over $1,000. Now it's down to 100. So it is dropping super fast.
Very cool. All right, well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show is produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel, and check out all our latest coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
See you next time.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.